Hello, this is Todd Durakan with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, January 21st, 2025, coming to you from my home studio. And we start on the front page with, well, the big news, the inauguration 2025 new chapter. Very large, bold headline, very large color photo that together takes up about half of the front page. And we'll start with the Decatur portion of it. Decatur event celebrates Trump return to White House. Tony Reid, Decatur, the once and future president, the star of the show, couldn't be in Decatur in person Monday. Donald Trump was busy getting inaugurated in Washington, D.C. But the sense of joyous optimism he inspired lit up the Decatur Club as the Macon County Republican Women's organization hosted an inaugural brunch in honor of the 45th and now 47th president. The opening prayer from Linda George, who describes herself as a Decatur-based evangelist and farm manager, set the tone. Seriously happy with an overlying sense of anticipatory excitement and fun. And quote, "We thank you, Lord, for him, Trump, and for answering our prayers," George, unquote, George told the hushed room. "We know President Trump is not perfect, but none of us are perfect." She then asked for blessings for the president's family and for the family of Vice President J.D. Vance before turning her attention to the delicious-smelling brunch the 100 guests present were about to tuck into. "We ask you to bless our meal and take out all the unnecessary calories, and we ask this in the name of Jesus. Amen," unquote, George intoned solemnly. The inauguration ceremonies played out live on two large projection screens at one end of the room while the guests ate and made merry. They played Trump trivia games, named Trump's wives in order, and browsed a rich selection of Trump merch. Tammy Baker, the 55-year-old president of the Macon County Republican Women, said the inauguration brunch was a new event to usher in a new era for this nation. "President Trump brings a sense of hope, unity, and strength with him as we get ready to embark on this golden age of America," she added to applause from the room. Later, she told the Herald and Review, "We're here today because we need to celebrate this historic, and I do mean historic, occasion." Tammy Sears, the MCRW president-elect, went even further, saying Trump was at the forefront of a new American revolution. "And I feel one thing he does, and he does best, is to empower people to stand up to fix things that have been going wrong in this country," she added. "He's like a lion making a bold new attack on what's been going wrong in our country, and not even just since Biden. I am talking decades of what's been going wrong." Baker nods in agreement, "and he loves his country," she said. All this was preaching to the happily already converted, like longtimer MCRW member Virginia Franklin, 79, born and raised in Decatur. "I thought our country was definitely headed in the wrong direction," she said. "And now we've got a chance to get back to the way it should be. I believe that as a businessman, Donald Trump knows how to run things, and as a good leader does, he knows how to pick people to help him to do the job." The Macon County Honor Guard presented the colors before the start of Monday's brunch, and time was taken to salute and applaud each branch of the armed services. Prolonged applause was also reserved for the Honor Guard itself, with the announcement it had recently officiated at its 4,000th veteran funeral. Let's see here, a medium-sized color photo. Macon County Republican Women's President Tammy Baker addresses the fired-up crowd at Monday's inaugural brunch event. She said President Trump would usher in a golden age for America. And she's at the podium with some bunting and balloons and flowers on either side of her at the head table. Looks like a screen projecting a video that I can't quite make out. And then round tables of many people seated around in front of her. Tony Reid photos, Herald and Review, and then there's photo of the Macon County Honor Guard. All right, back to the main page. We'll start with the caption on the photo since it's such a dominant part of the front page. Donald Trump is sworn in as the 47th President of the United States by Chief Justice John Roberts as Melania Trump. holds the Bible during the 60th presidential inauguration in the rotunda of the U.S. Capitol in Washington, Monday, January 20th, 2025. Julia DeMarie Nickerson, Poole, Associated Press. And the headline reads, Trump starts second term after extraordinary comeback. Articles by Zeke Miller, Chris Mergarian, and Michelle L. Price, Associated Press. Washington. Donald Trump was sworn in as the 47th president Monday, returning to power with a promise to end America's decline and to completely and totally reverse the actions of the man who drove him from office 4 years ago. Trump overcame impeachments, criminal indictments, and a pair of assassination attempts to win another term in the White House, and he planned to act swiftly after the ceremony. Dozens of executive orders were prepared for his signature to clamp down on border crossings, increase fossil fuel development, and end diversity and inclusion programs across the federal government. The orders from the incoming Republican president will begin the process of unraveling the Democratic agenda of Joe Biden, whose term ended at noon, moments before Trump took the oath of office. Declaring that government faces a crisis of trust, Trump said in his inaugural address that under his administration, our sovereignty will be reclaimed, our safety will be restored, the scales of justice will be rebalanced. Trump claimed a mandate to completely and totally reverse a horrible betrayal, promising to give the people back their faith, their wealth, their democracy, and indeed their freedom. From this moment on, he added as Biden watched from the front row, America's decline is over. The executive orders are the first step in what Trump calls the complete restoration of America and the revolution of common sense. Other goals will prove more difficult. Perhaps testing the patience of supporters who were promised quick success. Trump has talked about lowering prices after years of inflation, but his plans for tariffs on imports from foreign countries could have the opposite effect. Frigid weather rewrote the pageantry of the day. Trump's swearing-in was moved indoors to the Capitol Rotunda, the first time that has happened in 40 years, and the inaugural parade was replaced by an event at a downtown arena. Trump supporters who descended on the city to watch the ceremony outside the Capitol from the National Mall were left to find other places to view the festivities. At the Capitol, J.D. Vance, vice president, was sworn in first, taking the oath read by Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh on a Bible given to him by his great-grandmother. Trump followed moments after noon, using both a family Bible and the one used by President Abraham Lincoln at his 1861 inauguration as Chief Justice John Roberts administered the oath. A cadre of billionaires and tech titans, including Mark Zuckerberg, Jeff Bezos, Tim Cook, and Sundar Pichai, were given prominent positions in the Capitol Rotunda, mingling with Trump's incoming team before the ceremony began. Also, there was Elon Musk, the world's richest man, who is expected to lead an effort to slash spending and federal employees. Stopping at the White House on their way to the Capitol, Trump and his wife, Melania, were greeted by Biden and First Lady Jill Biden for their customary tea and coffee reception. It was a stark departure from 4 years ago, when Trump refused to acknowledge Biden's victory or attend his inauguration. "Welcome home," Biden said to Trump after the president-elect stepped out of the car. The two presidents, who have spent years bitterly criticizing each other, shared a limo to the Capitol. After the ceremony, Trump walked with Biden to the building's east side, where Biden departed via helicopter to begin his post-presidential life. Trump followed Biden's departure with freewheeling remarks to supporters, revisiting a litany of conspiracy theories about voter fraud and grievances against perceived enemies such as former Republican Representative Liz Cheney, whom he called a crying lunatic. He spoke for even longer than in his inaugural address, saying, "I think this is a better speech than the one I gave upstairs." Trump's inauguration realized a political comeback without precedent in American history. 4 years ago, he was voted out of the White House during an economic collapse caused by the deadly COVID-19 pandemic. Trump denied his defeat and tried to cling to power. He directed his supporters to march on the Capitol while lawmakers were certifying the election, results sparking a riot that interrupted the country's transition of the peaceful transfer of power. But Trump never lost his grip on the Republican Party and was undeterred by criminal cases and two assassination attempts as he steamrolled rivals and harnessed voters' exasperation with inflation and illegal immigration. Trump used his inaugural address to repeat his claims that he was targeted by political prosecutions, and he promised to begin fair, equitable, and impartial justice. He also acknowledged that he was taking office on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, which honors the slain civil rights hero. "We will strive together to make his dream a reality," he said. Now, Trump is the first person convicted of a felony for falsifying business records related to hush money payments to serve as president. He pledged to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution from the same spot that was overrun by his supporters on January 6, 2021. He said that one of his first acts in office will be to pardon many of those who participated in the riot, and he referred to them as hostages on Monday. "It's action, not words, that count, and you're going to see a lot of action," Trump said. 8 years after he first entered the White House as a political newcomer, Trump is far more familiar with the operations of federal government and emboldened to bend it to his vision. Trump wants to bring quick change by curtailing immigration, enacting tariffs on imports, and rolling back Democrats' climate and social initiatives. He has also promised retribution against his political opponents and critics and placed personal loyalty as a prime qualification for appointments to his administration. With minutes to go before leaving office, Biden issued preemptive pardons to his siblings and their spouses to shield them from the possibility of prosecution. Earlier in the day, he had also pardoned current and former government officials who have been the target of Trump's anger. Biden said, "These are exceptional circumstances, and I cannot in good conscience do nothing." Trump has pledged to go further and move faster in enacting his agenda than during his first term, and already the country's political, business, and technology leaders have realigned themselves to accommodate him. Democrats who once formed a resistance are now divided over whether to work with Trump or defy him. Billionaires have lined up to meet with Trump as they acknowledge his unrivaled power in Washington and his ability to wield the levers of government to hurt or help their interests. Long skeptical of American alliances, Trump's America First foreign policy is being watched warily at home and abroad as Russia's invasion of Ukraine will soon enter its third year, and a fragile ceasefire appears to be holding in Gaza after more than 15 months of war between Israel and Hamas. Trump, who had promised to end the Ukraine war even before he was sworn in, did not mention the conflict in his inaugural address. Trump said he would lead a government that, quote, expands our territory, unquote, a reference to his goals of acquiring Greenland from Denmark and restoring U.S. control of the Panama Canal. He also said he would pursue our manifest destiny into the stars by launching American astronauts to Mars. Musk, the owner of a space rocket company with billions of dollars in federal contracts, cheered and pumped his arms above his head as Trump spoke. Trump plans to crack down on the U.S. southern border with a playbook that's similar to his first term, declaring a national emergency, limiting the number of refugees entering the U.S., and deploying the military. He's also expected to try to end birthright citizenship, automatically bestowed on people born in the U.S., and to end diversity, equity, and inclusion programs in the federal government. Moving on to local and state on page A2, Macon County. Warrant issued after defendant a no-show. This article is by Tony Reed, Decatur. Tony Reed was quite busy yesterday. A sentencing plea agreement was all set to go ahead in the rape case against Decatur man Brad W. McGuire, but the one missing element turned out to be the defendant. Court records show the 34-year-old McGuire as a no-show for his sentencing and hearing, which had been scheduled for 9 a.m. January 17th, before Macon County Circuit Court Judge Jeffrey Geisler. The judge issued a bent warrant without bond for McGuire over the objections of defense attorney Susan Moorhead. McGuire had been arrested on October 19, 2023, after detectives from the Decatur Police Department were called in to investigate the rape complaint of a then 15-year-old Decatur girl. A sworn affidavit said she told police she had been subject to repeated rapes by McGuire since she was about the age of 13. She is quoted as telling police she would be assaulted once or twice a week. McGuire had been held in the Macon County Jail but was granted pretrial release on March 4, 2024. This coincided with the announcement that Moorhead had negotiated a plea deal agreement with the defendant, in which the defendant would admit a charge of aggravated criminal sexual abuse, a Class 2 felony. Geisler then agreed to dismiss two further charges of criminal sexual assault as part of the deal. The penalty facing McGuire was not specified in court documents, although they did say, quote, "This is an open plea with the expectation it will be an agreed sentence," unquote. Police, ex-girlfriend arrested after sex video posts. Tony Reed, Decatur. A Decatur woman was arrested after police said she got access to her ex-boyfriend's social media accounts and posted videos online showing him engaging in sexual activity with his current girlfriend, in the police report. Sergeant Jamie Hagemeyer with the Decatur Police Department said the 28-year-old suspect was arrested after the current girlfriend, age 22, filed a complaint Saturday night. Hagemeyer said the suspect, who is the mother of the ex-boyfriend's child, posted the videos to Facebook Live, where they were quickly viewed by more than 200 people. The suspect was arrested for the non-consensual dissemination of private sexual images and given a notice to appear in court, Hagemeyer said. All preliminary charges are subject to review by the Office of the State's Attorney. We continue with the local and state on page A3. Madigan corruption trial, regardless of verdict, could trial be make-or-break moment for Illinois? This article is by Ray Long, Megan Crepeau, and Jason Meisner. Chicago Tribune. The outcome of former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan's corruption trial will be watched closely well beyond Chicago's federal courthouse, with the verdict representing a potential make-or-break moment at the Illinois Capitol, as the all-important closing arguments in Madigan's case are on track to wrap up by week's end. Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker and state lawmakers must now brace themselves for the culmination of a trial that has put a spotlight on Illinois' messy intersection of money, special interests, and power politics. A guilty verdict in the landmark bribery and racketeering case would give elected officials little place to hide. Some of our observers say the unending marching line of state, city, and suburban officials who have gone to prison already proves a strong incentive to get serious about enacting reforms, but a Madigan conviction would certainly underscore it. If not now, when? Why not? Asked Connie Mixon, an Elmhurst University political science professor who testified as an expert for federal prosecutors in the 2023 trial that sent longtime 14th Ward Alderman Edward M. Burke to prison. Over the years, we've had lots of talk of ethics reform with not really enough action. Madigan, 82, a Southwest Side Democrat, and his co-defendant, Michael McClain, 77, a former ComEd lobbyist and confidant, have pleaded not guilty to wide-ranging charges, alleging they illicitly squeezed ComEd and AT&T Illinois to give their allies jobs and contracts. Madigan is also accused of abusing his public duties to garner property tax business for his private law firm. After 3 months of evidence featuring more than 60 witnesses and scores of wiretapped recordings and undercover videos, closing arguments were slated to begin Wednesday and last for 3 days. The jury is expected to start deliberating the week of January 27th, with a decision possible as soon as the end of the month. The stakes couldn't be higher for Madigan and McClain, who, even at their advanced age, could face long stints in prison if convicted. But there's a wider impact as well, one that could be felt from the Capitol building in Springfield to Chicago City Hall. The trial has amplified the findings of the Tribune's, quote, Culture of Corruption, unquote, series last week that documented how weak laws on campaign finance, ballot access, lobbying, and the oversight and the Byzantine structure of local government, among others, have helped dishonest politicians thrive in Illinois. Four of the state's last 11 governors and nearly 40 Chicago aldermen in the last half century have served time in prison. A steady stream of state lawmakers and local suburban officials also have been caught illegally engorging themselves at the public trough with others, such as State Senator Emile Jones III, still awaiting trial. The last major push in Illinois for reform came 16 years ago after the legislature impeached and removed Governor Rod Blagojevich. His successor, fellow Democrat Pat Quinn, created the Illinois Reform Commission, which made progress in Springfield, but in the end did little to enact the sweeping changes that advocates wanted. That's because lawmakers allergic to game-changing reform worked vigorously to block aggressive proposals and made sure to give themselves plenty of loopholes to slip through the various restrictions they approve. Mixon said what's needed is a complete overhaul of ethics laws in Illinois, looking at everything from conflicts of interest to campaign finance regulation and, quote, unchecked lobbying activity, unquote. In the end, we as citizens have a right to open and honest government, Mixon told the Tribune. Our government is supposed to provide for the public, which is clearly not doing if we keep having all of these corruption issues. It erodes our public trust in government at a time when trust in all levels of government is declining. Kent Redfield, a campaign finance expert, said the state's ever-growing roll call of public officials in trouble speaks to the need for systemic reforms to rein in the freewheeling political environment highlighted by the Madigan case. Redfield, a retired professor at the University of Illinois at Springfield, warned that state policymakers too often declare the, quote, system worked, unquote, whenever a politician is caught up in a corruption case, and then they lean on that as an excuse to avoid tightening restrictions on themselves. If you just focus on weeding out the bad apples, that's just the kind of guarantee for further crop failure, Redfield said. An unflattering look. Regardless of whether the jury decides what Madigan and McLean did was a crime, the trial has provided a deep and often distasteful dive into how Illinois government really works. Madigan's attorneys, as well as the ex-speaker himself testifying in his own defense, have argued that much of what the government alleged was illegal bribery was actually just everyday politicking, where lobbyists are paid to legally influence legislators on behalf of clients, and job recommendations are merely an offshoot of an elected official's power. And while Madigan was certainly powerful, his attorneys have argued he wielded it benevolently, providing jobs and opportunities for his constituents and always with an eye on protecting the Democratic Party agenda and blue-collar families. He has never made a demand on anybody, Madigan defense lawyer Tom Breen said in his opening statement in October, at one point slapping the lectern for effect. If someone says he did, that's bull. That's just bull. Prosecutors, however, are primed to argue that with the decline of old patronage system, in which politicians gave government jobs to political workers who had helped them get elected, Madigan got his favored precinct captain's jobs with private companies instead. In exchange, they said Madigan helped support those companies' agendas in Springfield. Madigan wanted, ComEd gave, and ComEd got, Assistant U.S. Attorney Sarah Stryker told jurors during her opening statement, and later added, Madigan wanted, AT&T gave, and AT&T got. Jurors have seen floods of strongly worded emails from McLean purportedly sent at Madigan's behest, urging ComEd representatives to hire certain people regardless of their qualifications or even interest in the positions available. McLean also bombarded ComEd executives with demands to increase payments for a clouted law firm run by Madigan ally Victor Reyes, at one point letting everyone at the utility know how, quote, valuable Reyes is to our friend, and friend is capitalized, unquote. The trial also centered on a separate alleged scheme where prosecutors say Madigan put pressure on deep-pocketed real estate developers to hire Madigan's law firm for tax appeal work. At the government's direction, then aide Alderman Daniel Solis, who was secretly cooperating with the FBI after being confronted with his own misdeeds, asked Madigan for help getting an appointment to a lucrative state board seat. In exchange for his help connecting Madigan to developers, according to trial evidence, the overall pattern, prosecutors allege, showed Madigan as a schemer who is willing to abuse his extraordinary power to enrich himself and his allies. Madigan's defense, however, has painted him as the exact opposite, a hard-working public servant who didn't immediately object to some of the shady statements on wiretap calls because he was, by nature, non-confrontational. In a surprising move late in the trial, Madigan took the stand in his own defense. Over the course of 4 days, he completely disavowed any knowledge of certain alleged schemes and gave innocuous explanations for some of his statements on wiretaps. Madigan also took steps where he could to distance himself from McClain, a close friend, confidant, and frequent dinner companion he's known since their days together in the legislature in the 1970s. During a lengthy and tough cross-examination, Madigan was asked whether he reciprocated McClain's loyalty. "I don't think I was as loyal to him as he was to me," Madigan said. "I would have differences of opinion with him. I didn't always accept his advice." In a more poignant moment, Madigan was asked by McClain's lawyer, Patrick Cotter, whether their friendship survived. "It did until recently," Madigan replied. McClain's attorneys, meanwhile, are banking on an argument that everything he did can be categorized as perfectly legal, lobbying his often professed loyalty to Madigan, his, quote, real client, unquote, is not a sign of his participation in a criminal enterprise, they said, but an effort to maintain good relations to support his lobbying career. Jurors have not heard that McClain was already found guilty of bribery-related charges in the 2023 ComEd 4 trial, though attorneys for him and the three other defendants, including Hooker, are fighting to get that conviction reversed in light of a U.S. Supreme Court ruling reinterpreting parts of the federal bribery statute. What's to be done? As the Madigan trial has unfolded, broad discussions are beginning to take place among good government advocates to determine whether the current political atmosphere and upcoming gubernatorial election cycle will present an opportunity to press forward for changes for now, said Alyssa Kaplan, Executive Director of Reform for Illinois. Among the ideas getting bandied about are strengthening the Legislative Inspector General and the Legislative Ethics Commission, as well as seeking to improve the revolving door clause overseeing lawmakers going into lobbying, conflicts of interest, and other avenues of government and oversight, Kaplan said. Separately, Kaplan said, her nonprofit group, which tracks money in politics and advocates for transparency, wants to take another shot at passing legislation to unmask dark money donations so that original unnamed donors to super PACs would be disclosed. There's a few more paragraphs left, but I think that has given us the gist of the article. And it brings us to the end of the first half hour of the Herald and Review for today, Tuesday, January 21st, 2025. We'll take a break and return with the second half hour.